to Human Rights 2020s, a podcast by the Human Rights Consortium Scotland. This episode is a recording from an event titled Our International Human Rights, CERD, held on the 11th of June 2024. In this episode, Consortium Director Barry Snowden introduces Kimberly Wong from the Coalition for Racial Equality and Rights to discuss CERD, the International Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, and the impact this could have when it is incorporated into Scots law. We hope that you enjoy this episode.
So, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this webinar today, which is part of a whole series of webinars called Our International Human Rights. And the one that we're looking at today is the International Convention for the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, which is quite a mouthful in itself. So we're going to unpack that a little bit in the next 45 minutes or so. So welcome. If I've not met you before, my name is Barry Snowden. I'm the Director of the Human Rights Consortium Scotland. And we are really delighted to welcome Kimberly Wong, who is a policy officer with the Coalition of Racial Equality and Rights, which is brilliant. So thank you so much, Kimberly, for being here today. Great. So I wonder, Kimberly, first of all, if I could just ask, do you want to introduce yourselves and tell us, for those who don't know, a little bit about CRER, so the Coalition of Racial Equality and Rights?
No, absolutely. So thank you for having me. The Coalition for Racial Equality and Rights, like I said, CRER, is a Scottish anti-racist organisation, and we focus on helping to eliminate racial discrimination and harassment and promoting racial justice across Scotland, and obviously the UK as well. We use evidence-based and rights-based approaches in our work mainly, which means that we undertake a bunch of research. We do a lot of policy development, we lobbying, campaigning, network building, etc. And we also organise Black History Month in Scotland, which is every October. And in CRER, I am the Public Affairs and Policy Officer. And at the moment, I'm currently leading on our work with CERD, which is, I should say, the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination.
We were just discussing actually before we started how human rights things are often full of four-letter acronyms, sometimes maybe even five or six-letter acronyms. So we'll hopefully not do too much of that today, but I think it's important to talk about. So CERD is short for the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. So so if we talk about CERD, that's what we're talking about today. But can you tell us just in a nutshell, what is CERD?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, definitely agree about the acronyms. I think CERD, the more we reiterate it, hopefully it'll become clearer. So it does stand for the United Nations International Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, which is a mouthful, which is why we just go ahead and call it CERD. And the most basic thing about it is that it's an international human rights treaty, and it was adopted in 1965 by the United Nations. And the UK agreed to it in 1969. And the main purpose of CERD is, in the name itself, is to eliminate racial discrimination in all its forms. So this includes like eradicating racial hatred, combating prejudice, and guaranteeing social, economic, and cultural rights without discriminations, and specifically on the grounds of race, colour, or national or ethnic origin. So I hope that was clear enough. It's in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And actually, I think the more you look at CERD, the more you realise it is quite a strong and radical convention in some ways. It is relatively short compared to some others, but it contains really strong things. Can you tell us just a bit more about what some of the rights are in CERD and some of the sort of main things it talks about?
No, absolutely. So I think CERD in more detail, obviously a lot of it is to do with the committee that oversees CERD and monitors it, but I think we can get into more detail about that later in terms of the actual rights. So as I said before, it guarantees kind of your social, your economic, cultural rights, protection from discrimination against hatred and inciting hatred as well. There's quite a lot that we can get into. And as you say, CERD is quite different from like CEDAW, which is like the discrimination against women and also for people with disabilities as well. And that's because there are less specific things in it. So they're not as much specific examples or ways that they can implement CERT in a way. So that's why it's a lot more vague than kind of other discrimination and equality laws. So yeah, I hope that kind of answered it a little bit in terms of the sense that it's a lot more generalized rather than specific.
Yeah, no, that was helpful. One minute, it does say, and it's states parties, which is basically countries who sign up to any convention, condemn racial discrimination and undertake to pursue by all appropriate means and without delay a policy of eliminating racial discrimination in all its forms and promoting understanding among all races. So as you say, it's maybe doesn't have as many specific things, but it has a very strong kind of statements about you must take action to deal with racial discrimination. This is just not on, and countries need to do something about it. I think, is that fair, sort of?
No, absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely articles in it that talk about using the most of your policies and making the use of your resources, making sure that basically everyone has equal access to things like housing, to education. And there are more specific things in it as well, which I think definitely state parties could do more on. So.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. I was just, we had a webinar around CEDAW recently, as you were mentioning, that's Women's Rights Convention. And one of the things about that is it's not just about equal opportunities and sort of a process, but it's actually about equality of outcome, which this is a bit technical, but it's actually, it's not enough to say, well, we just sort of treat everyone equally, but you actually got to have, so that you've actually got to have equal housing, you've got to have equal kind of experience of education. So it's all about the outcomes rather than the process, which is actually really challenging, I think, because it's not usually how we do or often how we do equality in the UK, I think.
No, absolutely. And I think there's a lot more to discuss about that, especially in Scotland, I feel like, in terms of achieving racial equality. And people's understanding of kind of race, racism, and what that actually means in terms of outcomes, as you say, or successful outcomes into achieving equality. And I think we can talk more about that kind of the distinction between kind of the legal sense of race and also the social construct of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, absolutely. No, that's really helpful. So as you were saying, the UK signed up to this treaty many, many years ago. So it's there in international law, and that means the UK is obliged to implement it. But does that actually mean that the UK does comply with the treaty now? And how is that monitored? And maybe you could tell us a bit about how, CREAR, that your organisation is involved in that monitoring and review.
No, absolutely. So we can go into a bit more detail here, I guess. So like you say, the UK did agree with this way back in 1969, along with, I think, 88 other signatories. So there's 88 other state parties that are signed up to this as well. But in terms of compliance, you can kind of tell it's a very different story. With CERT, you can tell that the idea, as you say, is very strong. The message in it is very clear that you should try to eliminate racial discrimination in all forms. But that very clearly is not the case, I would say. And CRER obviously do a lot of research and development in this as well. And I think to go back to kind of the basics of CERT, in a review of CERT, which happens every couple of years, the committee for CERT has to go and make recommendations to each state party. So in the UK, after hearing from the state itself, obviously, and what they're doing to take action against racial discrimination. But they also hear from NHRIs, which are like human rights institutions, and also from NGOs, which are like charities and people from the third sector. So how these recommendations are then implemented after they make these recommendations are actually all up to the state party themselves. So the UN doesn't really monitor in that sense. What they do is make a review every couple of years. And I believe that when CERT was first implemented, this was meant to be every 2 years. It was then becoming every 4 years. But the last time that the UK had a review was in 2016, which is actually 8 years ago. So these kind of recommendations, if they're not being followed up on regularly, it's quite hard to kind of keep track of anyway. There are also general recommendations and comments of CERT, which are basically providing more detail about how the treaty should be implemented. But again, these are always up to the state party to choose if they implement it or not. And one thing I think I would like to highlight is that under Article 14 of CERD, the government can let individuals or groups make complaints to the Committee of CERD if they think that their rights have been violated. But that can only be used if like all their channels in the UK have been exhausted. But actually, the UK hasn't made a declaration for this. So technically, if an individual or group feels that their rights have been violated through CERD in the UK, they can't really take it up to the committee. So that's obviously a very clear issue there. Accountability and compliance, I would say, are kind of the biggest issues right now for CERD and obviously for CRER as well, in kind of incorporation and understanding human rights, right? So I feel like there definitely needs to be stronger measures of actions being taken, because it's not enough to achieve racial equality in Scotland just to say all these kind of legislation and pieces of work, but not having accountability, as we said before. So that, to me, is really strongly linked to the collection of data. And so you're kind of asking how CRER is kind of involved with how CERD works. And I would argue that one part is that we always push for a bigger collection of data. We need to understand how racism is working in Scotland, and we need to understand the impact of current policies and current initiatives and how they're working to eliminate racial discrimination. Without the data and the evidence, we can't really do much to monitor or to implement. So I think that's really important. And that's also something we brought up back in 2016 when the UK last has its review. And that was in partnership with the Runnymede Trust in England, Race Equality First in Wales, and what's now the Northern Ireland Council for Race Equality, where all four organisations put together a joint alternative report. So an alternative report is, as I said before, when the NGOs are actually invited to submit their evidence to the committee. So they create what's called an alternative report, to say what, in their perspective, has been happening on the race equality front, basically. So that's the report that's submitted. And then they are also invited to attend the hearings in Geneva with the partnership. So in 2016, that meant that they went to Geneva. We were able to present. We lobbied with the committee members of CERD to ask for kind of Scotland-specific recommendations. And that's because the previous one in 2011, all the recommendations for CERD were actually only aimed towards the UK, rather than understanding how devolved governments work and what powers Scotland has or Northern Ireland has specifically, and how that can be implemented with CERD. And I would like to say that we were quite successful in the concluding recommendations that CERD gave out. We got specific mentions for Scotland and for our ask in things like mandatory recording of racist bullying. So that was a very long-winded way of explaining monitoring, but I hope that kind of paints a clearer picture.
Yeah, thanks. So that kind of regular process of review by the UN can end up with these important recommendations. I think that's what you're interested in, you're saying about there's almost then an onus on the state party, being the country or the government, to take them on board and kind of actually implement them. There's a sort of and I guess I know that CRER and many others kind of advocate and keep pushing and using those recommendations. And actually, for many people in this webinar and other organizations, we can do that as well, almost use them and say, look, the UN has said this, and therefore you can do it.
Absolutely.
I think so that CERD kind of process is, you said the last time it happened was in 2016, and it's in the middle of that again this year, I think. Can you tell us a little bit about what CRER and others are doing around that kind of the process now?
No, absolutely. Yeah, so I realized I'd actually didn't cover that. So the UK actually did release their own report last year, so 2023, which meant that CERD was then able to confirm that they were going to have a hearing for the UK actually this August. So in 2 months' time, people will be invited to Geneva to present their reports. So what CRER is doing is very similar to what we did in the last round of reviews in 2016, where we collect evidence from people across Scotland, across the UK, working in partnership again with Runnymede Trust and Race Equality First and the Northern Ireland Council for Racial Equality, sorry, and working together to create an alternative report where we kind of collect all the data together and are then able to submit it to the committee and press for recommendations we think will be more useful. and to kind of paint a clearer picture rather than just hearing from the UK government about their initiatives and what they think is happening in terms of their actions to eliminate racial discrimination.
Great. So really interested to see how that, what the committee think once they've got all that evidence in and how they'll question and the recommendations. Just, you mentioned before the just that it is the accountability gap that is the problem often between what's in the treaty, what's in those recommendations, and then what's done in terms of taking action. Do you think there are, I'm sure there are many, but are there particular rights in the treaty or particular areas related to racial discrimination that you think are particularly a problem in Scotland just now? What are some of the key things that you'd want to highlight and presumably you'll be highlighting in your evidence to the UN committee?
No, absolutely. I think there are so many issues in Scotland right now affecting people. And I think, but specifically in CERD, talking about rights in the treaty, as I mentioned, Article 5 in it basically covers your economic, social and cultural rights. And that covers things from protection against hate crimes to ensuring like equal access to housing and education. So to me, I think that question is asking, oh, what are the biggest socioeconomic issues that are facing minority ethnic groups in Scotland right now? And to me, I would say it's definitely poverty. So from our research and from what we know, one in five children in poverty are actually from a minority ethnic background. And that's a really, really big contrast to like white British children, for example. And that's despite the fact that minority ethnic children are already identified as a priority group from the Scottish government. And yet we're still seeing this massive disparity. And for adults as well, BME people are actually twice as likely to be in poverty than white British people. And I think this proportionate impact to which like minority ethnic groups are feeling poverty is from a lack of social security, issues of employment, cost of living crisis, everything that's actually happening right now, which is obviously, I think, to me, the biggest issue in Scotland. And obviously poverty is then tied to issues in employment, issues in housing, and we could get into the details of it, but I think the most important thing to reiterate again is that without proper data, we can't really determine how large the extent of it is. And again, we really do need data to be able to make real change and to identify where the problems are and how we can identify structural racism within Scotland.
Right, so that issue about data just comes up so often, doesn't it? Because I think, well, one, if it matters to you, you count it, I always think. But also, I think, you know, if we're going to actually show where the gaps are and what needs to happen, then you need to have the data and the evidence to know that, to know how people are disproportionately impacted. And presumably that's it's not just data. We need sort of disaggregated data. We need the detail in there as well, in terms of not everybody's experience, if they're from an ethnic minority, is the same, actually.
No, absolutely. I think that's definitely what CRU pushes for, rather than just, general collection of data. It's specific disaggregated data, and especially, let's say, in the case of poverty, for example, they don't actually collect specific disaggregated data on child poverty. So we're not able to see how different ethnic groups are impacted by poverty and how families are impacted, or their intake of social security or their access to housing, for example. And so, like I say, even though we can see that it's an issue, we can't actually pinpoint exactly how large of an issue it is and how many gaps there are in our data, because there are so many. So I think, again, it always comes back to data and to understanding the full extent of the problem.
Yeah, that's really helpful. So one of the things in the context of this webinar today is that the Scottish Government has committed to introducing a human rights bill, which will incorporate more of our international human rights directly into Scots law. And the idea of that is that they'll then be, public bodies will have to take these rights into account in terms of how they're making decisions and planning services. They'll have to demonstrate that they're doing that through reporting, but also that will give people the be able to enforce their rights. So these will be enforceable rights in court if necessary. Now, without getting into all the detail of that, CERD is part of that. The plan is that CERD will be part of that bill. And very specifically, the government's proposals Although, hands up, we haven't seen the bill yet, but from what we know from the consultation, the proposals were that when public bodies are putting into effect or taking into account these basic essentials rights, so things like housing and education and health and social security and food, when they are making plans to implement these, they need to be thinking about SERD. So they need to be thinking about like discrimination against people from ethnic minorities. You've mentioned already, you know, it's just so much about poverty, you know, these poverty-related rights. I just wonder if you had any reflections on things around, for example, education or, you know, health or housing or food that they'll need to be thinking about then. If this is what they're going to do, they need to think about discrimination in these areas and some of the impacts of that.
No, absolutely. I think that's kind of an interesting question, because I really think that in most areas of law and policy, things that are already in CERN should already have been considered. And that might be a kind of a roundabout way of saying it, but we already have lots of legislation for equality. We have the Equality Act 2010, we have the Public Sector Equality Duty, which, as you say, kind of should be holding public bodies to account. And also back in 1976, we had the Race Relations Act, which basically covers a lot of the issues that CERD was talking about. And obviously all these legislations and all these acts and things were not robust enough to cover all the equality issues that you're mentioning. So that's why we're seeing all these issues with access to housing, access to education, as you say. And when we're talking specifically about these, I think they should already be designed to consider the interests of people with protected characteristics. And that includes race. And I think all of these are really interesting things that, even though the UK government have implemented, again, it kind of goes back to, are they being held accountable for it? Are they monitoring it? Is there enough data? And I think nothing is going far enough to kind of achieve this equality or this like leveling the playing field. And we kind of need a more proactive way of achieving it. And I'm not sure if incorporating CERD in the Human Rights Bill through that would achieve that level of equality that we're kind of looking for. And there's also, obviously, we're not talking about limitations on incorporation just because we're a devolved government as well. So there are obviously issues on multiple levels that we need to talk about when we're talking about Human Rights Bill and like in specific. But again, I will go back to say that we actually haven't seen the bill. It's not out yet. All we can say is things that we're understanding from the consultation. And from what I understand, their move towards CERD doesn't move towards a duty to comply either, which wouldn't be that effective. So yeah. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, thanks. Well, just going back to that key point of CERD, which is to eliminate racial discrimination. That's at the core, and that means both direct and indirect discrimination. Do you have any reflections on what that would look like, for example, when it comes to areas like housing or health or education? Are there more things the Scottish Government needs to do, and not just the Scottish Government, actually local authorities, other public bodies, in terms of eliminating racial discrimination as all its forms in those particular kind of areas?
No, absolutely. I think we could probably discuss this for hours and hours and hours on end. I think that's basically what the work of CRER covers, is to talk about how all these policies and initiatives are impacting each area. So for in housing, we're talking about access to social housing, the fact that BME people are more likely to be private renters and then more impacted by issues of rents, and they're more likely to feel unsafe in their homes. And for education, like I mentioned before, we kind of talked about recording of racist incidents. Those things aren't happening, and there's not enough protection for like children, for example. And if we circle back to poverty again, we have already kind of discussed all these issues that then impact them. All these kind of disproportionate impacts of structural racism on these groups are then not obviously helping with eradicating racial discrimination, as we say. What Scottish Government can do, we can have lists and lists of demands, but our top one, I have to go back against it, which I feel like is becoming very repetitive in this webinar, obviously, is the collection of data. Like, we just need more data. We need them to actually care and to collect and to understand the nuances and how disproportionate impact means you're driving BME groups further into poverty or further into just really terrible conditions, if I'm being honest. So yeah, I think a lot can still be done. And if we have to get into specifics, we could be here for hours. So
yeah, there's plenty to discuss, and I, you know, and some of that is because we have structural systemic racism, and so this is never it's not the easy answers, but absolutely essential kind of questions, and actions required. It's just one of some of the other webinars we've been hosting. We've been looking at some of the principles around economic and social rights. So economic social rights are things like our, like we're saying, our basic essentials like housing, health, education, social security. And that sort of, there's a core principle there of having to demonstrate progressive realization of those rights, as in taking steps to improve that the public bodies will should be always taking steps to improve, as well as delivering on sort of minimum levels for everybody. So I think that's really important. So just link back to your point about data, which is very well made, is that you need the data in place in order to know where you're at, and as well as to identify what needs to be done. So I think that's really helpful. I'm going to take a question that's in the chat box. And then, so we've got a question that says, along with data, a clear definition of terminology would also be welcomed. Is there something we can refer to ensure we are aligned with terminology? So BAME or BME were being replaced by minority ethnic, but there's nothing kind of formal out there. That'd be really helpful to have your reflections on that, sort of what should be the terminology that we should use, that CRER use. Any thoughts?
No, definitely. I think that's actually a really big issue in terms of definitions and kind of our own understanding of race. And in terms of which definitions to use, obviously, when we're talking about CERD, and in this context of human rights, when we're talking about race, we're obviously talking about the legal definition. So there is like a finalized real definition of race, which people are using when we're talking about race within the context of human rights. And that's very different from when I'm using terms like BME. And I feel like I should have maybe prefaced this way earlier in our conversation, where when I'm talking about BME, we're talking about Black minority ethnic. And in CRER, when we use that, it's actually a broader political and inclusive identity we're talking about, rather than specific ethnic groups. And that's really important when we're talking about racism in Scotland. And we're talking about a shared history of colonialization and enslavement. It's very different from when we're talking about kind of census data or talking about ethnic origins, for example. So that's really important. But again, I think in this context of CERD, we're definitely talking about a legal definition of CERD rather than talking about structural racism, which we also go into detail about. So I hope that kind of makes sense. I think everyone's definitions are different. And that is a cause of a lot of problems when we're talking about race equality. But again, just to reiterate, in terms of CERD, we are using a legal definition of it.
Yeah, that is helpful actually, because I suppose CERD is actually something quite kind of specific. It's set down, it's international law in this context, and it has its own definitions, which are maybe not always the same as used in other contexts or for other purposes. I think that is useful. Actually, I've got a question there about what is the legal definition. I don't know if you've got that off the top of your head.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just seeing that now as well in the chat box. So I don't have the legal definition off the top of my head, but it is in the Equality Act 2010. So if you just pop that into Google, it will show up and you'll be able to have that. But obviously that definition is very different from our social understanding of race, I would say. So yeah, there is a difference. And I think to be clear about the definitions is a really important thing. But as we say, when we're talking about human rights, it's really important for them to keep it kind of open-ended so that it's more useful in different contexts rather than being very specific, because that can kind of almost shoot you in the foot, because then it means that you aren't helping as many people as you can through these treaties.
Okay, any other questions, do pop them in the chat box. But otherwise, I'm going to come to... Oh, here's one, actually, before I give my own personal one. So data collecting and reporting can be problematic from public bodies. I think that might be putting that quite mildly, actually. What could happen if they failed to report their findings?
Well, that's
So
a
that's
great
like
question.
speculative, yeah.
It's interesting that they worded it like that, for Mary. So what could happen if they fail to report their findings? I think a lot of them already are failing to report their findings, and we're actually seeing the effects of it now. When they're not understanding, for example, if we go back to poverty, for example, when they're not seeing how specifically these are impacting specific groups, and to see that there's actually a widening gap and it's more disproportionate, we can see for the data that we already have now that actually minority ethnic groups are more susceptible, and actually their rates of poverty are increasing, whereas for white British, or actually, yeah, for white British children, it's actually decreasing. But when we're talking about child poverty in general, when it's especially for Scottish government and, as you say, public bodies, they're saying the rates of poverty are decreasing. And that's not necessarily true for minority ethnic groups. And that's already a really big issue that people are seeing from not collecting data properly, not disaggregating their data, and then reporting it in a way that can be misunderstood by people. So in that sense, they're not really taking into account race when they're talking about poverty, for example. And the same can be said across housing, the same can be said across education. It can be talked about in justice. There's so many different areas in which public bodies are already failing to identify kind of racial discrimination or impacts of structural racism. And by failing to do that, obviously it's worsening the outcomes for minority ethnic groups. So I hope that kind of answers your question.
Yeah, thanks. There's a question there about accountability and enforcement of rights. What would good practice look like? Interesting, actually. Maybe Kimberly, if you've got any sort of thoughts on that, and certainly there's some thoughts from the Human Rights Bill. So do you have any thoughts, Kimberly?
No, I absolutely do. And again, we can talk about the Human Rights Bill, and we can also talk about our own kind of vision of what good practice looks like. I think for me, those are quite different things in Scotland. So for me, good practice, to talk about specific examples, I kind of have to lean back on our CRER publications. We have talked about what good practice can look like. We've already talked about how we can basically improve data collection, gathering, and then holding public bodies more accountable, making sure that we are following up, making sure we are reporting in the right way. So we can talk about that in we sorry, we do talk about that in CRER's publications, on our website, especially changing the race paradigm. I think if that can be a good resource for you to look into specific examples, and we have really good publications across specific fields to what good practice can look like. Because obviously good practice looks like different things to different people. In NHS, it can look different. In education, it can look different. And making sure that we're holding them all into account, I think that's the most important thing. And I realize that's a very vague answer, but it's only because if we go into like the nitty-gritty of it, it again could take hours and hours. So yeah, I would highlight our resources at on CRER website.
Thanks. There's a question there about if a public body has made a decision that is against the equality legislation, can people affected apply for some kind of injunction until or using a judicial review can be lodged and decided, or until a judicial review can be lodged and decided? Is there some kind of injunction so as to avoid irreversible serious effects of that decision if it's implemented? Yeah, that's quite a Yeah, any thoughts or reflections on that? And it's also something we can come back to afterwards, but you know.
No, absolutely. I think it's a really interesting question. I'm just trying to take some time to kind of process that actually. So if a public body has made a decision that's against equality legislation, can the people affected apply for some kind of injunction until a judicial review can be lodged and decided? I believe that you can. Maybe I'm incorrect in saying this. In terms of actually specific processes in that, I have to say I actually am not very well versed in that. I can look into that in more detail, hopefully, and get back to you. But no, definitely if a public body has done something against equality legislation, that's a very severe issue. And it's not just a kind of judicial review, I feel like that would take place. It would be a very serious thing. But again, I think looking into legal aid and access to justice, that would be kind of what we're looking towards, I hope.
No, that's helpful. There's a sort of comment, sort of question there about I'm interested in this in relation to the UNCRC Incorporation Act, so children's rights. Do you have any just thoughts or reflections actually on around racial discrimination that affects children, young people? And if you're going to take children's human rights seriously, that means taking the human rights of children from ethnic minorities seriously and giving them due attention. Any thoughts or reflections around that?
No, absolutely. I think they kind of absolutely do work in conjunction. As you say, it's definitely when we're talking about all children, we're also talking about protecting children from any form of racial discrimination. That's for all people, regardless of your nationality, whether your ethnicity. It's not just specifically for specific groups. If you're interested in CERD in terms of UNCRC, I think that's the easiest way to look at it. It's for all people. So obviously it's also for all children. So if you're looking into the nitty-gritty of it, there are specific examples. So if we talk about children, I think the first thing that pops into my head would probably be education. We have a lot of kind of research and information on kind of racist bullying that takes place. And obviously you're protected through the UNCRC from that, but you're also protected from CERD from racial discrimination. So in those areas, they do kind of work in conjunction. I don't know if that answers the question, but I think the easiest way to look at that, or to however would be useful for you, is to make sure that you're looking at it from a perspective where it's affecting all people and all children. So I hope that was clear.
Yeah, no, I think what's one of the real strengths of human rights and human rights framework is the overlapping and interconnected nature of the different human rights treaties. So actually, children who are from ethnic minorities are protected through the UNCRC, so Children's Rights Convention, and they're protected through
Absolutely.
CERD, which is a convention against racial discrimination, which means that when public bodies are putting into place different policies, for example, around education or play, or in lots of other areas actually, but also affect children, that they also then need to think about the impact on children from ethnic minorities as well. Mary's asked, well, what happens if public bodies fail to implement the UN recommendations?
That's a really good question. And again, I think we've just kind of discussed accountability. But in my perspective, I feel like public bodies have already failed to implement a lot of the recommendations. So what is happening now? That is the kind of the big question, because I don't think that public bodies are being held to account enough. And I think that's what the push is for, is to make sure that any legislation that passes or anything that happens from now on, we're talking about accountability, we're talking about scrutiny, we're talking about how is this robust? How can we measure impact? How can we measure when they failed? And how then can we pull them into being responsible for those? So yeah, I don't that doesn't really answer the question, because it is already happening, I feel like. And in terms of the UN recommendations, as I said, we're not really, even though the UK has signed up to CERD and they do agree with these treaties, they aren't necessarily implementing them. So it's not happening enough for us to be then able to recognize that they're failing. And what is the best way to recognize that is for us, CRER, is to get the data. If we can have the data, we can then hold them to account through that. And then obviously you would have to lobby and make sure that they are then being held to account for those. And I feel like, again, we just keep circling back to the same things, but accountability is so important, especially when we're talking about human rights and especially to CERD.
Yeah,
Yeah.
thanks so much. And I guess on that, we should really have called this whole webinar series "Strengthening Accountability" or something, because actually, the accountability gap is real. There's not a lot that happens when they don't implement UN recommendations at the moment. But that's also what the Human Rights Bill is about. It's actually about trying to close that accountability gap, whether
Yeah.
that's by some of the rights being directly enforceable, others because they'll have to demonstrate through reporting and to on what they have done, and then there'll be consequences if they haven't enough to improve on that. So I think I think there's lots there, isn't there? But
Yeah.
accountability is so key. Thank you, Kimberly. We really appreciate your time and your expertise. I feel like there's lots and lots to discuss, which is brilliant. So thank you everyone for being here, and especially thanks to Kimberly for speaking and sharing your expertise with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Human Rights 2020s podcast. For more information about our work as Scotland's civil society network for the protection and promotion of human rights, please visit our website at www.hrcscotland.org or follow us on Twitter at @HRCScotland. Thank you.